It's time for Off the Curve with Justin Spiro.
Tick tock, there goes the clock. Sweet 16 on the horizon, couple days away. I don't know if I'm nervous, excited, happy, scared. I don't know any at this point. It's sort of the typical Michigan State tournament confluence of emotions. I'm kind of all over the place. And, you know, it's interesting. I said before, as a Michigan State alum and as a University of North Carolina alum for my master's, my sort of hyper focus in season is really Big Ten mostly, and to a large extent, the ACC. So anytime we're outside of those sort of traditional powers in those conferences, you know, in the Michigan State, North Carolina schedule, there's some holes to plug in. And I've been following this Kansas State team sort of from afar this year and been impressed. I saw their win against Kansas, their rival in overtime back in January. It's obviously a tough team, really, really good, strong guard play. But I'm still not really confident in making any type of prediction because I feel like I haven't seen enough of them. And that leads us to our introduction. I am a good friend of this gentleman's colleague, although they never met, the Michigan State 24/7 Sports equivalent of this gentleman. It's Tim Fitzgerald, 24/7 Sports, Kansas State reporter. Great to have you. Thank you for joining us and on short notice as well on a crazy week for you guys.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I'm not in New York. My younger guys are taking care of the work. I've got some health stuff that I stayed behind with, but this works out great. Having being in the studio, not traveling, and being able to kind of anchor things from here has actually been good. It kind of stinks not to be there, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, of all things, I can't go because of a fantasy baseball draft. I mean, it's not it's not interfering with me watching it, but it's interfering with the trip. I've missed the last two. If I miss three in a row, I actually am going to get like legitimately kicked out of the league. It's a league rule. So, yeah, I can't miss it. This is like a 30-year league. It's older than I am, I think, at this point. So, anyway, let's get to it. I want to start with a very narrow focus because my audience, which is 97% Michigan State fans and 3% Michigan fans that hate Michigan State and hope I say something stupid so they can end my career. Get us sort of on board with where Kansas State is at. I want to frame it this way. Ben, if you can throw up Media One for us. The three-year run prior to this year, which was our old friend from the Big Ten down in Champaign, Illinois, Bruce Weber, had you guys 34-58 over a three-year stretch going into this year. And there wasn't much buzz, certainly that I'm aware of, that this year in particular would be much of the contrary. I know there was some optimism around the new coach and obviously the acumen and the respect that he had within that program at Baylor and the success he had there. Jerome Tang is really a highly regarded guy coming in. But you look at this year, fast forward, and the jump from that 34-58, Ben, throw up number two for me, please. 25-9, a massive, massive jump. You go from winning, what, somewhere in the 30s, high 30s percent-wise, to winning about three quarters, you know, 70% of your games. This is not really something I expected from afar. Just tell me a little bit about this Kansas State team. How surprised were you as someone that covers this team, that covered the poor Bruce Weber versions of this team? Are you surprised by the fact that they're here right now?
I am. You know, looking back, those last 3 years of Bruce Weber were just awful. It was the three worst years in a row in K-State history. And in fact, the two first seasons of those three, last season wasn't awful. They were around 500. The other two were unwatchable. They were literally the worst back-to-back seasons in the entire history of this basketball program. And yet he got a third season. Thank you, pandemic. And it was just pitiful product. It was awful to watch. He did the same thing apparently at Illinois. He did at K-State. He gaslit the fans as he went out the door and blamed them for all of his troubles. So this program was at a low. This program was in big trouble. And, you know, the guy they went after was the alum, friend of mine, Brad Underwood. They made a really good run at him and just weren't able to kind of pay what he wanted. But during the process, it was, you know, it wasn't all in on Brad. They were looking around and they found Jerome Tang, who they were familiar with. We knew surprisingly little about Jerome Tang. After 19 seasons within the conference at Baylor, we didn't know him that well. He was kind of in the, even as associate head coach, in the background. I think a lot of people had perceptions of him that were so far from the truth that it's kind of comical now. as soon as he got here, you realize this was something different. He is a incredibly positive, uplifting man. He's very spiritual, which, you know, has been an interesting balance at a public institution now, but he's done a good job with that. And my high end for this season was, I think this dude can get K-State back to the middle of the Big 12. And then maybe into the NCAA tournament. If you're in the middle of the Big 12, you're probably in the tournament, you know, 8-9 seed type of game out in the second round against the one. And here we are. They get third in the Big 12. They get a third seed in this tournament in the East region. And they start picking some teams off here. And they finally kind of look like themselves. They you could tell they were a little nervous against Montana State, but you've seen some of those highlights. That's the fun team. And it's not just the wins. It's not just the wins that have made this different. It's the brand of basketball. It is a really delightful brand of basketball. And, of course, as you probably know, in the transition, he got it down to two returning players. Two. He had to recruit an entire new roster, something you can only do in the transfer portal era. And I'd say he did all right, not just finding good players, but finding really good kids that have meshed together into a locker room, which is a total emphasis of this head coach and this coaching staff. And here we are. Marquise Noel is a revelation as, you know, one of the two returners. He's been, you know, Jerome Tang was sent from above for that kid because he's an All-American now. And finally getting the last piece was Keontae Johnson. And you get a player of that level, you're going to be pretty good. And, boy, they've been better than we even imagined with those two guys playing well.
And the reason I think this tournament in general is so historically difficult to predict is because of the mental aspect of it that's hard, maybe impossible to quantify. I mean, you see Arizona, I don't know how much you've watched of the tournament outside of, you know, your beat, but Arizona looked absolutely petrified down the stretch against Princeton. Purdue looked absolutely petrified the entire second half against Fairleigh Dickinson, you know, that 16-1. It matters so much just how these teams handle things mentally, and that's tough to predict. We've seen teams that looked pretty tough all year throughout the regular season, but there's something about this stage that's different, and it is a itty-bitty, tiny sample size, I admit, but I was really impressed watching that Kansas State-Kentucky game. There was a point where, you know, fact check me maybe, but I think Kentucky was up four, with maybe like 4 or 5 minutes left, and it started to seem, it was a coin flip for like 6-7 minutes, and it was going Kentucky's way. You're thinking, if they can just make one open three, you know, they had their who's the kid that went like 1 for 15. It just felt like Kentucky's game to take in real time watching it. And Kansas State was the tougher team down the stretch. We've seen teams repeatedly, Arizona folded like a tent, Purdue folded like a tent. Kansas State punched back. Kansas State had no fear in that situation, and they D'd up, they got the stops they needed, and then Noel is just otherworldly. Does this seem like a tough team to you, or is that just me parachuting in and they looked really good for 5 minutes?
No, they've had those kind of wins. I mean, they won at Texas. They won an NBA game at Texas. They won 116 to 103 or something. You know, they and Texas just kept coming back at them. Texas is really good. And Kansas State just kept answering. They won at Baylor early in this journey, which is never easy to do. You know, and then they kind of went into a lull, but you're right. This tournament's different. And this team was anxious to see other programs than Big 12 programs. This conference from top to bottom has just been hyper competitive. You know, the results in the NCAA tournament can make us question how good overall it was. But from a competitive standpoint, it was brutal. I mean, Oklahoma gets last in the Big 12 and beat Alabama by 24 points in January. I mean, that's just the kind of night in, night out fury you're facing in this conference. I've never seen it like this. Usually there's one or two teams. And in fact, the last few years has been Kansas State. You can count on to catch a win. And that just wasn't true. In fact, K-State lost back-to-back at Texas Tech and at Oklahoma. And we thought everything was coming apart in February. And here they are. They are a tough team. Marquise Noel is a bulldog. He really is. Heart over height is his motto, and he plays that way, and he played that way against Kentucky. I don't know if you've seen the photo from Getty Images. It's been all over K-State Twitter. In fact, I did one of my daily delivery videos about it, but he drove to the basket during the game and bodied up Shibuya of all people, and and had a little lay-in. Ball came through the net, and it just dropped in his hands, and he just kind of slammed it on the floor. Didn't spike it. He just assertively put it on the ground, and the Kentucky players are standing around looking at him like, you know, where's the technical or something. That photo defines really how this game was played. K-State was trying to make plays, was determined, and Kentucky kept looking for calls. It's kind of a Jerome Tang thing. This team is built for this. We'll see if they can replicate some of those results against a much better basketball coach. A basketball coach that is going to go back and look at those troubles that the Big 12 defenses gave K-State for a while and replicate that on Thursday evening in New York City. And that'll be a big challenge. You got to get Marquise Noel off center. And if you can knock him away from his comfort zone, he can get a little frustrated. And that all of a sudden that determination manifests itself in something less positive. But Kentucky never could do that. They couldn't figure him out.
He reminds me a little bit, and there's differences in the game, but in terms of attitude and stature, Jameer Nelson, if you remember from the St. Joe's, I mean, now we're going, I mean, his kid is playing now at this point. I think his kid's like in the transfer portal, but you know, from 20-ish years ago, where it's just this undersized dog guy that seems to really run the team and the mood of that team. And he does seem like one of those guys. And I've seen him play, you know, a few times before that Kentucky stretch that I talked about, but he seems like that kind of guy that pulls up and from the parking lot, and it's a dumb shot for 99% of the country. But for him, you kind of feel like it's a pretty good look. And that's a scary guy to play. I mean, you mentioned about knocking him off his game. I mean, just looking at the back of the basketball card, he doesn't really have very many bad games. I had to go all the way back to that January 17th game against Kansas, which Kansas State won, to find the last time this guy scored in single digits. He was held to 4. And then you got to go back like another 20 games to find the other time he didn't do it, and he scored 9. So the guy had basically one bad offensive game. Now, I know there were some inefficient games. There were games where he shot 5 of 17 or whatever. But there are games where even Michigan State's best players are – close to invisible or 7-8 points. This guy kind of rolls out of bed and is in double figures, it feels like. So isn't that a challenge for Michigan State to get him off his game? I think that's the daunting task for them.
Well, really the key to beating Kansas State is to create turnovers. And that sounds kind of cliche, but Kansas State is almost unbeatable at 11 turnovers or fewer. They had 3 to open the second half. If you remember that game with Kentucky opened it up. K-State led at halftime, and Kentucky opened up the game pretty quickly and in the second half. And then K-State just stopped that and stopped turning it over. They ended the game with 8 turnovers. They had 8 turnovers, I don't know, with like 15 minutes left. So they did not turn the ball over. And all those fancy, schmancy passes you see Marquise Noel throwing, once in a while they misconnect. I think he had one in the first half that misconnected, but he was on money with everything he did in the second half against Kentucky. And that's one of the interesting, he brought up an interesting thing about this team, because Keontae Johnson wasn't particularly good against Kentucky. He really struggled. They did a good job with him. He was 5 of 14 from the field, so he had one of those high volume shooting nights. 13 points. He had 3 of the 8 turnovers. It was not a good game for Keontae. And yet this team finds ways to beat good teams with one of their 2 stars having a lackluster performance like Noel did against Kansas. Bill Self took away Marquise Noel, and other players made it happen, including Desi Sills and Naquan Tomlin. They've got a sneaky good roster. It's amazing to watch how well he put together the roster when you consider 11 of the guys that are on scholarship were new. They brought him in. So it's hard to get Marquise totally knocked off his game, but when he is a little bit off, it can affect the entire team. And I'm positive Coach Izzo is going to go do whatever he can to slow him down and keep the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, we were hearing so much about how Marquette was going to turn us over to death and get all these transition points. And I think the final number was 12 or 13 turnovers from Michigan State, which is not like horrifying. We've had worse outings than that, but it's not good. But there were, I think, 3 charge calls. You know, there weren't a lot of sort of those pick 6 turnovers where, you know, it's going for 2 or 3 the other way. It just didn't feel like it was a damaging component of that game for the most part. It felt pretty controlled. You know, Michigan State's been the 3rd best shooting team in the country from deep all year. 4 guys that shoot at a really high clip, you know, 40% plus from 3 up until 2 seconds ago, and Malik called it thunder it, and they could not throw it in the ocean in either of their games, USC or Marquette. So this is, it speaks to just how impossible this thing is to predict. We talked about the mental aspect. Who knows how these kids will react, but Michigan State won 2 games with box scores that I thought, if you had told, just show me the box score, I thought there's no way they win. I mean, I thought Marquette would beat them by 15 if they shot that poorly. What does a loss look like for Kansas State? What is it beyond just rattling the cage? Is it turning you guys over? Is that sort of the way you'd attack? Is that, I know you mentioned that. Is that really the key to this game? If you look at the end of the game and Kansas State has 6 turnovers, are you guys just dead? What's the look there?
Well, the turnover threshold seems to be 11, and this team is capable of going into the 20s. I mean, they are careless with the ball. They do not value possessions in a consistent way that you have to, you know, that's been their problem. That's why they've got some late season losses is they got into a bad span of turning the ball over. They have seemed to rein that in here over the last couple weeks, which is pretty good timing. They won 4 down the stretch before losing their last regular season game and their Big 12 tournament game. And those were just, you know, 2 teams fighting for a lot more at stake. Let's put it that way. Now, Kansas State, like everyone else in the tournament, has got plenty at stake. That I think those tables are even, if you're not locked in, and what's at stake here, you know, I don't know what to tell you. So I expect Kansas State to come out with a great deal of energy. But again, sometimes that energy will manifest itself in trying to make too much happen. Try to get into that lane, and when there's nothing there, you force a pass, or, you know, you put up a bad shot. And that's another thing. Sometimes Marquise will get into the lane, get himself in the air, and have to throw the ball up at the rim. And it's not a turnover, but it might as well be, because it's a defensive rebound going the other way. If K-State stops those turnovers, clamps down on defense, and gets into broken court situations, open court or, you know, off a turnover, this is a really good basketball team. This is a team capable of winning a national championship. But that consistency has not been there all year. We haven't seen it in any prolonged stretch. We saw it, you know, for a period in January when they got ramped up into the Big 12. But over 6 games and 3 weeks in March and April, I'm not sure they have that in them. But if they do, the statue for Jerome Tang will be under construction soon.
It's interesting. There's, even within the same program, NCAA tournament runs are not all created equally. Michigan State has been in situations where it's national championship or bust. That's the goal. There's been many years where that's the case. And then you look at like 2008, you know, we end up in the Sweet 16 against Memphis, the great Memphis team. Everybody expected Michigan State to lose. We did, got our doors blown off. Final Four in 2015, we went against Duke. That was a house money. We're just happy to be there. So I'm curious for your take with Kansas State. We talked about the 3 years prior. You know, we talked about how surprising this run has been. It's outpaced any objective expectation. Just from the team perspective, even the fan base perspective, where are you guys? Because I told you there's a couple times where the Michigan State people are as proud of a program as we are, kind of just happy to be there. You've gone so far beyond what anyone expected. Is there some element of, like, this is a great year no matter what, or does this team feel like they really want more?
Oh, yeah, it does. You're right in both sentences. I think the Sweet 16 was kind of the, well, he's done everything we thought he could do in year one. We dreamed that he could do. Even when we reset the standards at Kansas State to see where they could go, Sweet 16 kind of seemed like it. And honestly, you mentioned Marquette. That was a bad matchup for K-State because of that ability to turn you over. And so that in some ways was a relief. I had K-State going out to Marquette in this round. So it is intriguing, but it just so far goes past what anyone was prepared mentally for. Bruce Weber had lowered the expectations so dramatically from the fan base that he had them convinced you could only be good once every 3 or 4 years when you loaded up a team and then you hit the right combination their senior year. And it worked. He won 2 Big 12 championships. He won the first season was here, one with Frank Martin's players, not shocking. But he did rebuild it with Barry Brown and Dean Wade and those guys, and went to the 2018 Elite Eight by knocking off Kentucky without, you know, Dean Wade, their best player, arguably. And then after winning the Big 12 championship in 2019, they did what they did the first time around. He won two Big 12 championships and lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament both times. He advanced past the first round of the NCAA tournament only in that 2018 season. So there has been such a failure to have success in March in the tournament where you're really measured in college basketball. I love the conference championships. Don't get me wrong, but you are measured in March. If K-State gets to the Final Four, no one's going to bitch that they didn't win a Big 12 title this season. You know, you get to the Final Four, you win a national championship. That's all that matters. You could have gotten fifth in your conference. It doesn't matter. So he didn't measure up that way. And Jerome Tang, coming out of Baylor, where they just won 2 years ago, I think they're well prepared. You know, they kind of have the blueprint how to get this done. And if they can just stay locked in, which they seem to be, and not turn that ball over, I think they're going to make a run. But Michigan State, Izzo scares me. He really does. He's there's been a lot of Bill Snyder comparisons to a guy that, you know, does so much with maybe lesser players than what a Kentucky would get, and just maximizes everything he can get out of his roster, and will almost always outcoach the other coach.
And we've seen him in the Final Four multiple times as a 5 seed, as a 7 seed. Now he's in the Sweet 16 and favored in the Sweet 16 as a 7. He has the most NCAA tournament wins in the history of the sport as a lower seed. So, I mean, that's certainly the benefit. Yeah, he's unbelievable.
It's incredible. You know,
and he has a chance to add one more here in a couple of days. I know Michigan State fans are rooting for that. I think, you know, I had Jack McGuire from Barstool Sports on yesterday, and he's a Michigan State hater. He's a UConn guy, so he doesn't really care that much about this game, but he just doesn't like Michigan State because our fans are kind of mean to him. So he's an honorary Kansas State fan, but he and I kind of agreed that the concern, if you're a Kansas State fan or just a Michigan State hater like he is you're coming into this game with Jerome Tang for as wonderful of a year as he's had. You're going against one of the three or four best tournament coaches of this generation, one of the 10 best ever in any era. I just think if I'm going to war, and I think the teams are pretty evenly matched, the point spread seems to reflect that. Doesn't the tie have to go to the Hall of Famer that's been to the 8 Final Fours and has the most wins in this situation of anybody in the history of the sport over the rookie? For as great as Jerome Tang is, this is still his first rodeo. Is that a fair takeaway, do you think?
I would love to find out from Vegas on this line how much of it was Izzo. You know, I think, honestly, I think it'd be as much as 4 or 5 points. From a perception of the gamblers, you know, the gamblers are going to look at Michigan State that exact framing that you just had. And it's legitimate. It's going to be a real test for Jerome Tang and his staff. They've done some pretty neat stuff as a coaching staff, making adjustments and understanding how to beat some pretty good teams. This is a different beast because of the stage upon which they're going to be playing. And there's a whole nother side story for Kansas State that I don't know if it's a huge benefit for the Wildcats or an enormous distraction for the Wildcats in the fact that Marquise Noel and three other players on this team are from New York. And maybe one of the most intriguing players in all of college basketball is Naquan Tomlin, who had a dunk fest against Kentucky. Naquan's from New York, and he didn't play high school basketball. He played on the playgrounds. He had some great issues in high school, never went out for the high school team, went to junior college, and played his first organized basketball game at junior college. As far as I know, he's never played an organized official basketball game in his home city, and he'll be doing that. Is that a good thing, or just like his head's going to explode during
the first
half?
Depends on the kid. It feels like it's got to matter a little bit. I mean, we saw Tum Tum Nairn throw a tomahawk dunk down in the Bahamas and never dunked before or since. So, yeah, I feel that stuff matters.
Yeah, I mean, you've got them, Ish Masood, both of the returners on this Kansas State roster that live in the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas, are from the Big Apple, New York City. Then Tyke Green, the kind of the last guy on the player rotation, is also a New York kid, but he, you know, played a few minutes in that other game. They're going to have a contingent of fans there that are kind of built in, which is interesting. They're going to have a lot of locals that have ties to this team, and we'll see. I fear that's actually going to be a distraction, that every kid in New York wants to play at the Mecca, and now they get a chance to. And is it too much? Does it kind of overload the senses, so to speak? We'll find out. This team comes out and starts turning the ball over, it's going to be a long night for K-State. That's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, that can go both ways. One of the five worst Michigan State tournament losses of my lifetime was hosting Syracuse in Detroit. Half of the team or more was from the state of Michigan. It was a 90-10 split for Michigan State in the crowd. It was considered this massive advantage, and we end up losing to this Syracuse team with a six-man rotation. Four of these six guys were in foul trouble like early in the first half. It was a terrible loss, and I don't think the Detroit thing helped. It's like, I think that would have been better played in Piscataway or something. So
yeah,
that can go either way. It's a little different because obviously, you know, that was a Michigan team playing in Michigan, so it's not quite apples to apples, no pun intended, with New York. But yeah, that can go both ways. I want to frame it like, really, for as much as we've talked about Kansas State and the surprise, the fact that Michigan State's in this situation is somewhat surprising too. Ben, if you can throw up our third piece there. So the preseason odds, this was according to the Wynn Sportsbook, and this was reflected elsewhere as well. These were a couple of long shots, both of them. Michigan State was 75-1 to win the national championship. They had something in the neighborhood of 30-some teams with better odds, you know, a couple of them that had equal or better odds: Michigan, Ohio State, Dayton, Illinois. Yeah, a couple of teams that didn't make the tournament there. And, you know, obviously Illinois was a disappointment, and 500 just above. So, I mean, that kind of gives the Michigan State perspective on how far down they were. This was not a team perceived with any chance of making a real true run. And then Kansas State, they didn't have odds for you guys in the national championship. I checked, and I'm sure some book somewhere did. Caesars didn't, Wynn didn't, the Mirage MGM Sportsbook, they didn't even offer them because you guys would have been too long of a shot. They gave odds for Iowa, Louisville, St. Louis, Providence, Notre Dame. Like, three of those teams finished somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 and 24. I mean, you had payouts of 100-1 for these schools that were just terrible this year. Kansas State was perceived as such a long shot, such an afterthought, that they weren't even offered as a bet at the vast majority of sports books. So it really is kind of shocking that not only is Kansas State one of the last 16 teams here, but they're a three seed. They have a very reachable path to the Final Four. I think it puts into some perspective on how wild it is that you guys were perceived as, I don't know, so bad or such a non-threat that they weren't even offering odds. It's like, you may as well offer odds to the high school team. Do you think this team has embraced that sort of chip on the shoulder, nobody saw this coming? Does that seem like something they've really leaned into on this run?
That's a K-State mentality. You know, it's kind of, look, I'm going to do one of my videos on this, so let me steal for myself here. Guys like Marquise Noel on the basketball court and Deuce Vaughn on the football field are epitomized Kansas State, the little institution that overcomes those, you know, shortcomings and succeeds at a high level. Yeah, being the underdog is the K-State story. And, you know, you bring up those odds. I caught, I think it was early December, I think I was going to the Big 12 championship in the car, and I caught 100-1 odds on K-State making the Final Four. Why not throw $10 on that? So I've got that bet out there. And then later I caught, I think after some, you know, notable success, I went ahead at, I think, 45-1 and got, you know, odds on K-State winning the national title, which I truly view as throwing money away. But I have bets that I feel really good about that turn out to be absolute trash. So, you know, just why not go with the nonsense bets, because they might make better sense than my actual bets. But yeah, this team has succeeded at levels that are unimaginable. The transfer portal has had kind of the opposite impact on the college basketball game that we thought. We thought the rich would get richer, and it's not been that way. There's been an incredible trickle-down effect and an ability to rebuild so quickly. And it's just evened things up for everyone. And I think it's been really good for the college game. I'm intrigued to see if Kansas State and Houston and I don't even know who else, but, you know, not big college basketball brands fill up the Final Four, what the TV ratings will be. And I tend to think that fans just want good sports, and the brand names bring an embedded great big following. If you're Kentucky or Kansas, you got a big following. But at the end of the day, basketball fans or football fans are going to watch a good game if it's a good game. And it doesn't matter really what the brand is involved.
Yeah, I mean, you and I aren't the type of guys that give a shit, but the ratings will be down if it's, you know, Kansas State and, you know, a mishmash of the non-traditional brands. And that's not to impugn you guys. It's our problem in football too. It's like, right. we're not as big of a draw, and that's just the reality of the program.
I kind of want to see how far, because I think the perception is half, you know, something dramatic in the ratings.
Oh, I don't think it'll be that bad.
And, you know, I mean, Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 would try to claim they're 90% of the viewership. And I'm like, no, that's not really true at all. You have gotten all the best time slots. There's no doubt about that. But then you turn around and you see some of the games not involving them that have had, you know, the TCU Kansas State Big 12 championship had huge numbers for the conference. You know, almost matching the SEC and Big 10. So, yeah, I just want to, almost like a social experiment. I want to see how much those numbers drop off, and because I know it won't be as dramatic as what some people want to think.
When I was still in school at Michigan State, one of my favorite teams outside of my own fandom was the Jacob Pullen Kansas State team. I picked them to go far like every year for 3 years. I love that group. And it seems like a program that is never really down for long. You do have those, you know, that couple year period with Bruce Weber, but it seems like just a proud, tough program. There's a lot of the Spider-Man pointing meme with Michigan State and Kansas State, where Michigan's the more traditional brand in state here. You guys have the same issue with Kansas, mm-hmm. You know, especially in terms of the basketball program in your case. So I think these programs and their coaches seem to have a lot of overlap there. I'm fascinated to see how this goes. I have such admiration for what Jerome Tang has done. I don't know. I know it's a little different with conferences and the national awards, but I mean, if that guy's not getting some serious college coach of the national coach of the year consideration, the panel is absurd. I mean, I've been so impressed. The fact that they're here is nuts. I would be shocked if we have a strong sense of who wins this game with 5 minutes left. I feel like that ESPN win probability chart that, you know, they throw up and down on the Gamecast is going to be somewhere between 45 and 55, one way or the other for these teams. I mean, is that kind of your feel? Doesn't this kind of seem like the point spread is accurate? It's going to be a tight game like that.
I agree. I don't think anyone's going to get away from anyone. Honestly, I think if someone gets away here, it's going to be Michigan State. It's K-State. Can't operate underneath, you know, whatever defensive pressure they're facing, and they're turning the ball over. They hit the self-destruct button. But I do think it'll be a really close, entertaining game. And as a guy who's covered Kansas State sports since the 1980s, and usually I'm on the road with the team and sitting passively on press row, covering from home is a bitch. It might kill me. I don't think I have the heart for this. I don't know how fans do it. I've gained so much admiration for fans. You know, when you're at a game, you kind of feel like you're in it. You know, you're part of it. You don't have any impact on the game as a media member, but you're in that environment. And at home, you're just like watching something where unfold before your eyes that you can't have any. If you shout, nobody hears you. It's kind of like being married. It's been a different feeling for me to be here in the studio watching games as opposed to out on the road with my guys.
I mean, the best thing about being there in person for any sport, I've always felt, is just the observation of body language. Like the cameras aren't going to pick up 99% of that stuff, but like you can look at a team's bench when they're down 4 or 5 late in the game where it's still very much a game, but like it's not going great like it was in the Kentucky game with you guys for a minute. Like, if you're there, I can sit and just stare at the Kansas State bench for an entire timeout and see if the shoulders are sagged or if people are engaged. And I've always felt like that's a huge advantage just for sort of even predicting how a game's going to go.
Absolutely.
That's the big, like 2009 against Louisville in the Elite Eight, number one overall seed Louisville when Michigan State beat them. It's like, I'm looking at the bench, their bench with 7-8 minutes left in a close game. Louisville looked dejected. And I don't know if the TV captured that, but it is different. Are you going to go to the Final Four if Kansas State gets there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Houston's drivable. It's not a fun drive from here, but it's drivable. And I'll probably credentials, you know, hopefully we can get that taken care of. but I'll probably take, you know, more of my full crew that typically would cover these games.
Well, I do sincerely appreciate your time. I know you're probably in high demand and you got a lot to do with this week going on. And I know we're busy as well. And I appreciate all the time you made for us. We'll finish here. Just give me a prediction. I don't care about the number, you know, but who's winning this game and, you know, give me a deficit.
You know, I think it's going to, if K-State's going to win this game, I think it's going to follow a lot of the script that the Kentucky game did. They're going to have that, you know, closing surge that they had at both ends of both halves. And, you know, I think this is going to be a one possession game. You know, someone's going to be shooting at the buzzer to try to win the game. But I'll take K-State by two in this one.
Yeah, very fair. Very fair. I appreciate it. Tim Fitzgerald, great to have you. And I don't know, maybe we can do a post-mortem after. I'll be more willing to do it if my side wins. If we lose, I'll probably disconnect my phone and not pay my Wi-Fi bill for a couple of weeks. But I'd love to have you back maybe for I'll keep you shorter next time for a post-mortem.
You're fine.
And hopefully for Michigan State, it's in the green and a happy day. But either way, it'd be great to chat with you again. Thanks so much.
Okay. I appreciate you having me.
Tim Fitzgerald, 24/7 Sports, the second member of that brand to join us on Off the Curb, and sincerely appreciate his time with everything going on there. And it's a crazy time. You know, we have a lot of the Michigan State side, you know, in our friendship circle and all the reporters that cover Michigan State team. So I know how crazy this time is. You know, Graham Couch, Justin Thind, David Klein, they're working overtime. I think we're trying to do the same as well. So sincere appreciation to Tim for joining us. And Ben, we pitched the show to you like 5 hours ago, and you stepped up as always. So this is Off the Curb. I don't know if I'm going to see you guys again before the game. I am getting into that point where time to button down the hatches and you know, maybe not be seen or heard for a couple of days by friends, family, and audience alike. So we'll see. I'm feeling good. Not cocky, but good. I kind of am in the inverse prediction of Tim. I think Michigan State by two. You know, it's call it lazy. That's what the point spread is. It seems about right. I would be shocked if either team wins this going away. You might get the fake winning going away where, you know, it's 10 points, but it was a 2-point game with 3 minutes left. But it's going to be tight. That's the feeling here. And it's going to come down to one box out, one offensive rebound, one putback. It seems like that kind of game. So I'm ready. Getting there anyway, and I appreciate you guys joining us. A lot of content the past couple of days, and I appreciate you making time for us with all that else that's going on. And I know you have a lot of options out there. So go green again. Thanks to Tim Fitzgerald. No beef with Kansas State, man. Those guys are cool. Off the Curb. See ya.